You're listening to Big Blend Radio's English Connection Show with Glenn Burrows, owner of Norfolk Tours. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Big Blend Radio. You know, we love to go over the pond and chat with Glenn Burrows every fourth Saturday, but not only on his own podcast channel today, on our Way Back When History channel and our new Women Making History podcast. And this is exciting for us because every day we celebrate women of the past, present, and future. And Glenn has talked a lot about different historic women in England. He's got famous writers. He's got so many nurses, right, Glenn? One of your favorite.
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely nurses.
Yes, he loves his. You want to give her a shout out since we're talking about women's history?
Edith Cavell is a local one that really tugs at my heartstrings. First World War nurse who was put to death because she helped English and Belgian soldiers and soldiers to escape from the Germans in the First World War. She was shot.
You had some strong women in England.
Definitely.
You know, for sure.
We still have. I'm married to one.
I was going to say, you're married, Diane. And she also makes really good cheese scones, by the way.
Oh, she does.
That's important. Today, we're going to be talking about the queen of the Iseni tribe. And I don't know if I'm even pronouncing that right, but when we get to her name, everybody has a different way. Boadicea, Boadica, Boadica, Boadica. Boadica, the queen of Iseni. So is it the Iseni? And this is what, AD 6061 when she was? Okay.
It's the
How do you pronounce it?
Well, when I was at primary school, she was pronounced Boadicea. Now they seem that they want to pronounce her Boadica. And the tribe that she was in charge of when I was at school again was called the Iseni. But they now want to make it the Iceni. So I really don't know. But, you know, I stick to what I learned when I was at school in the 1960s. So she's definitely Boadicea, and she was in charge of the Iceni tribe.
Okay, so when we talk about tribes, that's going to sound a little different thinking about England with tribes.
Yes,
we think
very much.
Right? So tell us, who were they and how did she become like their queen? Because she really stood up for rights, and didn't her husband get murdered? And that's kind of part of how she ended up running things, or?
Well, yeah, her husband died. I don't know whether he was murdered as such, but I know that he died. That's why she sort of became queen. But then she didn't really become queen because the Romans took everything. But in England, in this time, it was still sort of a tribal, many little tribal kingdoms. So in East Anglia, where I live, which is actually where Boadicea lived, it was ruled by the Iceni tribe, and there were other ones. There were the Trinovites who were now down in Essex, and there were all loads of tribes all over England. But they were all taken over by the Romans. And what basically happened was that Queen Boadicea's husband, who was Frusaticus, or I don't know how he pronounced his name, but because we never learned about him at school, but her husband sort of governed his area under the Romans. So the Romans still allowed him, if you can say such a thing, to carry on being the king of the Iceni. So it was sort of a thing that they allowed to happen and he allowed to happen. So although the Romans came in and took over, they still worked together. But when he died was a different thing. And although Rome were going to be quite happy to let things going on as they were, the man in charge at that time in England, the sort of like, you know, the general, he wanted to take it all. So he then decided that he was going to be in charge, and these peasants, these tribal people, were going to have to get out, more or less, or just do as they were told.
It's interesting because we're actually recording this on St. Patrick's Day, and I had to revisit the history of St. Patrick's Day and who Patrick was, and also a different name, Sukuth, I think. I can't pronounce. I was trying to pronounce his names on a podcast today, and I'm like, I should just shut up. But it was interesting about him being taken as a slave to Ireland, and he was born in Scotland, taken as a slave to Ireland, and then, you know, he was as a slave so despondent, but he felt the calling of God, and he was like a disciple of Christianity.
Right.
And so, and he's, they were saying, you know, the history goes back to Ireland and even the Celts in Scotland being more pagan. So what I wanted to know was, like, were these tribal peasant folks, were they more on the, is this like the pagan side of things? And then at same time, the Romans had the Christianity because they're more Catholic, right? Or am I getting myself twirled? I'm getting twirled.
No, you're too early. You're too early. This is only AD 60.
Oh, so this is pre.
This is only like 30 years after Christ was crucified, roughly.
Okay.
So Christianity hadn't really come of any.
Listen, Glenn, this is how I've managed to live so long. Age means nothing to me.
No. So basically, yes, they were all definitely pagans. And the Romans had their own Roman god system anyway, didn't they? Because all the Roman emperors were gods, and, you know, so it was all very disjointed. But they were actually at the time living quite happily together, because although we say that the Romans came and took over and the Romans moved in, I'm a great believer that actually, yes, the Romans came in and took over, but actually most of the people who lived in England at the time were what I would call Romano-British. So they were British, but they took up the Roman way of life rather than staying, being their sort of peasant tribes. They sort of moved up the social scale. So a lot of the tribal leaders in England would have taken over Roman ways, because they realized it was much nicer. You know, it's nicer to live in a house than it was to live in a mud hut.
So right. And they had, like, the Romans had the fabrics and the, all these, you know, the spices and
The Romans brought with them a vast world of communication, because, you know, we all know that to have a problem, once you've got a settlement, say, for instance, the biggest problem is to cut off the communication. So when Roman rule stopped in England in the sort of 5th century, it weren't because all the Romans moved out of England. It was because all of the communications stopped. So they couldn't then send to Rome for another shipload of wine, or they couldn't send to Rome for another shipload of something else. You know, so it stopped bringing in the stuff that they needed from the rest of the Roman Empire. So they then were left to live on their own in their own little enclaves. So it was the communication that Rome bought that then allowed it to become more civilized, if you want to say. So it was all about, like, the methods of building and things like that. So it was the ideas, it was the infrastructure, to use a new word, you know, it was the building of the roads, because the Romans came along and just built roads all over
like
England.
Like Pedder's Way. This was
like
that time
Way, which is a Roman road that leads from the coast inland.
Okay.
So if you bring a boatload of stuff, whatever, whether it be olives or wine or whatever, pottery, because they used to bring pottery up to England from France, you know, so they would bring in the posh pottery, and they would then distribute it amongst the people who were living the Roman way of life. So it's all about the infrastructure and the allowing the Roman way of life to be adapted into the British.
So this is kind of that hodgepodge, not a hodgepodge, but like the gray areas were getting infiltrated. Let's put it that way. It's like, you're on this side, you're over here, but in all history, there was all people crossed over borders. It's a natural thing. Curiosity, Like you're saying, moving on up in
Move up the
social,
scale.
yeah, move up the scale. And what's interesting is like now, we live in worlds of racism, but in a lot of times back then, it wasn't necessarily racism; it was caste, and it was. I mean, if you
Yes.
even look in Asian cultures, I was talking about this on a previous
Yeah.
interview
Yeah, it's the same
about
principle.
it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So to get my head straight, because like I'm getting my years and stuff, AD, BD, BC, all that, whatever, ACDC.
Yeah.
Now I know that. That's a
Yeah,
good
of course.
band, one of my favorites. But if you look at, know that Merlin Robin Hood, legend, lore, mysticism, but were they more of that era or later? Like, when did that come about? Just because it seems to me when the tribal life was happening and the pagan side, that there was all this, that's where all the mysticism came and the different gods and the Merlins and the wizards and the witches and all of that kind of life. And
Well,
that goes with paganism, right?
yeah, I mean the pagans had their different belief systems, but most pagans believe in nature. They,
Yes.
most pagans worship the ground, and actually a lot of the early belief systems were about paying respects to the gods, which were to them like the rivers, the lakes, the sea, the land, trees, things like that were their gods in a way. So for the pagans, it was a lot to do with the nature. So, the different seasons and the things that were going on around them were what they worshipped. And in a way, I always find it very easy if I want to believe in anything sort of higher than me, a god, a higher power, or whatever. All I've got to do is look out of my window and see when there's ice on the ground that there's little birds flitting around, eating things off our bird table. Now, to me, that's unbelievable that a little tiny bird can stay alive outside in the frost, because I
It's
could. I'd be
it,
dead.
it it it's insane. I mean, Mother Nature, well,
Yeah.
our family history of
Exactly.
witches and all of
Yeah.
that. This is why I'm kind of going, I wonder if we got burned at the stake. They said we were part of the occult thing or whatever. If we're pagans, I mean, look at Nancy. We're kind of woo-woo on nature, right? Not kind of, we are. But I mean,
But you see,
if our, yeah.
there weren't a problem with that years ago. The only problem came about when the sort of should I say the Christians or the other side of things then wanted to say, well, actually, what you're doing is wrong. So that is when they became demonized. That is when they started to burn them at stake, because the other party didn't think what they were doing was right. So
Oh,
therefore,
are we back to politics again?
in a way, yes. I mean, when I say the other party, I'm sort of, either the Christians or whatever. That is why they wanted to attack the pagans in some way, because they didn't feel that they were doing what Christianity told them to do. And that's why the Romans used to put the Christians to death, because they didn't agree with what they were doing. So,
Wow. But then look how big they got into Catholicism,
well, exactly. But it's
Wow.
all about it's the strange, the strangers are the ones who get put out. And that's the big party, so to speak, are the ones who set the rules. And then the strangers, shall we call them the little party, sometimes actually comes up and takes over, and then the other lot get kicked out. So, with the Romans, for instance, when they started out, they were putting the Christians to death in the gladiatorial
Oh,
arena.
that's right. Yep, that's right.
But then it didn't take too long for the Romans to adopt Christianity. So therefore, then they weren't putting the Christians, they were putting the peasants that they were capturing, who were actually the pagans, they were putting them into the lion's den in the arena.
You can't do that to the nature people.
Well, that's what they did, didn't they?
But that's my family, Glenn.
Well, I know, but, you know, I can't go back and change history.
I know, but this is so interesting because over the last week, I swear about every three interviews have had this running theme. And I kind of feel like we're at this cycle of history where because we've been able to document history, we can read about it, we can listen about it, watch movies. We're now getting this. I mean, when I think about when I was in school, we didn't have as big of a picture as we have now, you know, went on. And now it's becoming pretty clear that we're repeating. And so all of this it's kind of like, I feel like everyone's coming on the show saying, you need to let everybody know this. Stop it. You know, we don't need to be like this.
History repeats itself.
It's a cycle.
I don't really want to bring it up, but I'm going to, because you know that we like to stir things up.
Yes.
And if what I say is not right, you'll have to just edit this bit out completely.
But we're not doing it now.
We are. When the English took over Tasmania, for instance, we ended up killing off all the Tasmanians. There are no native Tasmanians left, and that's thanks to us. And look what happened when we took over Australia. We did away, didn't we, with the way of life of the Aboriginals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we then told them they can't do what they've got to do. They've got to do what we want. And we've decimated their population. Look what happened when we went to Canada, to America.
Africa. Look what happened to Africa. And you know, Africa was just about every European and Asian country going into Africa and trying to take rule. And right now that's happening all over again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's so interesting. South African history, the Boer and, you know, the Anglo-Boer War. I mean, and you're talking about the visitors. That's so interesting because exploration is exciting. You're in tourism and hospitality. We're in that. Tourism and hospitality is about unification, unity,
exactly.
Understanding, compassion,
yeah.
Empathy, education, transformation. But back then, exploring was about, we're going to conquer the world. And I mean, just think about it. They'd only just then figured out that the world was round. So, you know, yet we still have people thinking we're flat and with ice walls. Like people, seriously. But anyway, I want to go back to Boudica because Boudica. We just can't call her booty. In this country, someone's going to call her booty. You know, that's okay. A no-no. No, okay. No, but Boudica. Is that Boudica? Okay.
Boudica.
Okay. When she, well, no, because I think this is, it's interesting in history about how women really rose up, and when they did, you better run, because yes. they were hardcore. Like even the queens, right? Your different queens throughout your history, like, you know, Queen Victoria. All I mean, there were ones that you didn't mess with them. And when it came to war tactics, I think sometimes they were worse. And even look at Cleopatra, right? Cleopatra, I think, was a lot of women that were gaining power. Kind of looked up at Cleopatra at times too, but you know. Boudica, I'm sorry, everyone. I do not mean to butcher her name. But with her, she was already kind of stepping in. What was it that the people after her husband died that decided, what was her qualities? Was she kind to them and then strong? What was it about her that led her to this form of power, whether or not she was like the proper queen? She was the head of her tribe and went up against the Romans. And at that time, they beheaded people and stuck them on, like,
yes,
that was part of pride. Well, of war spoils was heads.
I think the thing that they, I mean, we don't know, is the, you know, all we know is what we have a little bit written about her and what has been passed down. But what I can glean from my own readings and my own understanding is basically that her husband died, so therefore she was then accepted as the queen. And when the Roman generals came along and said, well, actually, we're going to take over everything now. She actually stood up and said, no, you're not. And her tribes all agreed with her, obviously, because they were then going to lose everything. So they all then rose up. And I think that was what it was. She was the leader. She was the leader who did things. I mean, it's like Joan of Arc. I think a lot of people need is just somebody to stand up and say, no, we're not going to put up with this. And then you've got all these people behind you. So there were literally thousands of these tribesmen who actually stood up behind her and actually supported her in what she did, because she was the one who stood up and said no.
And she fought. She actually went.
She was in the front, from what we can make out. You know, she seems to have led her army from the front, you know, which is unthinkable. For a lot of people didn't think that women would do that sort of thing, but obviously they did.
And she got hurt too. I mean, one of the leaders went after her, but behind you and behind me, and for those who are watching, we have and for those not watching, just listening, we have a photo of a sculpture. It's a bronze sculpture done by Thomas Thornycroft. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I'm remembering this. And it's right near Big Ben in London. And that is a famous sculpture of her on horseback with her two daughters. And her daughters play a role in the fact that I think they got killed during the wars.
They were raped by the Roman soldiers, according to what is said.
No wonder Mother's Rage is coming after him then.
Well, exactly. You know, I mean, you've got to think about what anyone would do if number one, all your tribal lands were taken away from you, your daughters were defiled by Roman soldiers, and you yourself was then sort of turned into a slave. She was publicly flogged, which again is not the sort of thing that you'd want to accept if you were a queen. So I think anybody would stand up. But the fact that we still learn about her, I think the main thing is that she was a woman. And, you know, it is such a massive story to think that a woman, especially at them times when, you know, all you hear about is men, you know, to think that a woman stood up. But then again, if you know any strong women, they don't just stand back, and they're going to get out there and they're going to give as good as they get. You know,
they're going to give you a good hiding.
You don't argue with a woman, do you?
No, Glenn, you never.
Ask Diana. I don't know.
No, but I mean, if you've riled up a woman that's strong and you've hurt her kids, you know, you're going to get it. But she really, and she stood side by side. And I think that is something to actually get in there and fight. I think she's probably had a lot of fuel in her of rage to be able to do that, and knows, like at that point, like you're saying, what else are you going to do? You're going to just succumb to it and be a slave and then get raped yourself, flogged again, you know, probably murdered, you know, because they did like walking around with heads on stakes. I mean, that was pretty gross.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think if you've been a tribe, and for anybody who has belonged to a strong club or a strong group, you are part of that group. You know, you are part of. And if ever you've been part of a big tribe, to have that completely decimated is not acceptable. You know, so you know, she just stood up and put her foot down and said, no, we're not going to put up with it. And they didn't. I mean, the fact that she got so many people behind her, you know, she literally got her entire tribe, and she got neighboring tribes as well, on the way down to where the Romans were in Colchester, which was their big city, their capital city. On the way down, she got the other tribe, which was the Trinovantes, if that's the way you pronounce it, because I don't know.
I saw that. I was going to ask you about that, but
yeah, I don't know. You take your pick. But they joined her as well, and they completely obliterated Colchester. I mean, they completely they slaughtered everybody in the city. Now, I don't condone that at all, but they did. They completely killed, obliterated the Roman city.
But I don't think, from what I've read, and I, you know, I'm not the historian here, but that other tribe she banded with, that was out of like almost desperation. And, and that other tribe was, they were actually not friendly before that. They weren't that nice. And I think they probably did more of that because when they took out Colchester, that had to be.
Well, that was their area. You know, when the Romans came, they took the Trinovantes area, which was Colchester.
Okay.
So actually, when Boadicea came along and said, look, we're now going to go and beat up the Romans, then they had a really good reason to join her. You know, so even if your worst enemy comes along, and then the worst enemy says, we're going to go and fight the even worst enemy, you're going to join, aren't you?
Isn't that a life thing of relationships? Is that
because enemies become friends if you're fighting a common
like
enemy?
This. That's why you never burn bridges.
No, you don't, because you never know when you're going to need them.
No, really. You may, I mean, especially back then, you never know. You know, you've got to think about even how they were fighting and when they were fighting and what the weather was like. I mean, nowadays we're like, oh, it's a little cold. Let's put a sweater on, a jacket, a jersey. I mean, this kind of, I always look at that. What was the terrain like during battle and war? I mean,
Well,
it was
again,
not pleasant.
We know the area, but we don't know where the battles were. We don't know what the time of year was. We don't know all this information. But we do know that, like I said, they completely obliterated Colchester. And they do say that there was probably in these battles that were going on, probably about 70,000 Romans and Britons who were on the side of the Romans were killed. You know, they then went further. And they went into London, which was a smaller settlement than Colchester at that time, and they completely obliterated London as well. Oh, they
but it
took
wasn't even London at that point, right? It was Londorania or something.
Londinium, yeah. And then they went up to St Albans, which is another big Roman settlement, and done that as well. And then the army from the Roman army then decided that they were going to do something, so they came from North Wales, which is where they were at the time, and they then met them somewhere in the Midlands, they don't know where, and basically took them on. And the Romans were fantastic soldiers, so all the Romans really needed to do was to actually get themselves ready for a fight. The thing
and they
that,
had the armor, they had the armor, right?
Well, they had
Versus the
everything.
tribes.
They had the armor, but they also had the way to fight. So they, I can't think what the word is, tactics. They had the right tactics, you know. So the Romans, once they were organized and they knew they were going into battle, the Britons had no chance.
Right. I mean, the Britons were more, here's the tribal people living off the land, knowing the land. But that's knowing the land is a point, you know, that's a thumbs up. That's something in your corner, right? But I think the Romans, I mean, they knew how, they were at that point understanding marching and all of that and
everything.
How to command. You're talking about communication. Tribal people, they're like, let's go. You know, you're going to go. It's almost like you're running on emotion versus
exactly.
Warfare.
You've just got a whole crowd of people going forward, screaming and shouting with a spear and a sword against an organized army. Well, you don't stand a chance against an organized army, you know, because the organized army knows what they're doing.
It's like when they're all standing in a row now, there's like a riot or something, and they're all with their big shields and everything. And it's like, you know, we've got the pepper spray, we've got all this. You can be as hyper as you want. We're going to get you.
A lot of that
That sucks.
is Yeah, but a lot of that actually is Roman tactics, because the Romans, they used to advance forward by a whole group of them holding their shields out in front of them,
Right.
and behind the ones on in the front row, they would hold their shields above their heads. So even if you had a load of bow and arrow, spears, anything, it couldn't get through because you literally were completely covered. You had
Right.
the shields in front, and you had the shields on the top, and you had the shields around the side. So therefore, there was nothing that they had, that the peasants had, that was going to get through.
So there, remember the Trojan horse?
Yeah, I've heard about
It's
that.
kind of like that, when they're all inside the Trojan horse, and then like people didn't know a whole army was in there, and then it's like, here's this horse, and then everyone pops out and goes, surprise, party.
Yeah, quite.
You know what I mean? It's like a walking tank,
Yes.
really.
Well, that is literally what the Romans were. They were like an armadillo,
Yeah,
like
the
a
armor.
tortoise, basically.
Yeah.
They just had armor all around them, and they just
Hey,
kept
we're in
advancing.
Texas right now. There's armadillos out here.
Oh, are there? Well, there you go, you see.
Yeah, they're very
So
cute,
that's
but
what it was
most of
all
them we
about.
see on the side of the
It was
road.
all about tactics. And they knew what they were doing. So as soon as there was a big battle that was well organized, the Romans just decimated
Rape,
the.
pillage, and plunder, literally.
Yes. But
Oh, man.
the one thing
So
about Boadicea is that she didn't get killed in battle. She took poison.
that's
So
what
they're
they're
better.
saying, yeah.
That's what they say. She didn't want to give up or do anything, be captured or anything. So they say that she died through poisoning. But again,
It's
we
like
don't
Cleopatra.
really,
We still don't know what really happened with Cleopatra.
we don't really know, do we, exactly? And it's all hearsay. But at
Yeah.
the end of the day, it's a good story.
It is. Well, it's about standing up. It's about
Exactly.
principles. Whether or not you have it's standing up against the big machine. And boy, do we need to do that as the little people these days, right? Isn't
I
it?
knew you were going to say
You did the poke. You knew it. Did you do that on purpose? You did.
No, not at all, not at all.
But it is. I mean, it's like, how we always talk about this on the shows is like, the independents rising up against, these big conglomerates that are taking away small business, and independent spirit. Just the soul of being independent is important. It's the
Well,
soul being of
and
it.
that is what Boadicea stood up for. She stood up for her tribe, and her tribe got behind her, and they did quite a lot. They showed the Romans what for, until the Romans actually came and got them back, so to speak.
So, Boadicea is are there any remains or any places we can go to? It's just that ancient that you would never really, I
No.
mean.
You've got to remember that at that time, the Britons, the ancient Britons, were living in mud huts. So we know where the Iceni tribe was, and that was actually in Norfolk, where I live. This is where Boadicea came from.
Wow.
But we don't really know where. It's not
I
recorded
mean, Glenn,
where they were.
you could have been walking to school as a kid, walking where Boadicea fought. And,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I
that's
mean,
amazing.
they do say it's more likely that she was sort of in the Thetford area, because Thetford is a much,
With a forest.
the forest weren't there, but it's an earlier settlement
Okay.
than, for instance, Norwich even, so it's a very early settlement. There's a really early road running through the middle of Thetford, and there's a lot of really early activity in that area. So it could well be in the Thetford area. But again, nobody knows. So it is all open to conjecture. But at the end of the day, we know that the Iceni were in this area of Norfolk. So I could well be related to Boadicea. Who
You
knows?
never know. But this is really interesting about Norfolk itself. I mean, you've got a mammoth, you've got the oldest footprint, You got Boadicea, you got the Iceni's, you've got the Romans. I mean, come on. I mean, you've got the World War II airfields between England and America. I mean, you're like the springboard over to Europe. I mean, it's like, hey, let's just jump here, boing, over and get the Germans during World War II. You know, it's pretty, your history is pretty. And then you've got, you know, Sandringham and, you know, wow.
We have
it's
got
pretty amazing.
We really have got a very, very long and varied history, you know, all the way from sort of like Stone Age right the way up to date. And we've got examples of all of these areas, you know, all of these historical periods. And the thing that I always think about is that, you know, this is only, you know, 2000 years ago. It's relatively recent when you compare, you know, fossils and things like that.
Yeah.
And you know, but actually it is still so long ago that we don't really know what was happening. You know, we know that the Romans were here because they left lots of stuff everywhere. We know that the Iron Age people, the ancient Britons, they were very, very forward in what they were doing. They were fantastic goldsmiths. You know, they had gold coins. They had their own golden jewelry. I mean, the fantastic things that they had here. It was a very, very rich tribe.
It's amazing. You know? I mean, even places they've been where they left like their Roman baths. I mean, I've got it. If you go way, some of the history, I've listened to some podcasts on some of the history of the Romans and even looking at Christianity and actual, the use of, they were using psychedelics way back when. The Romans were into stuff. I don't know what was going. It's just this interesting group of people that I think that, and I can see why England and the Romans butted heads at times, because there was this grasp for power. And then you think about when Sir Francis Drake decided, hey, I'm going around, you know, I'm going to go and take his golden hindy, his ship around for the queen. And look at the wars he started with Spain. I mean, he really angered the Spaniards. He really did get their goat. But if you think about it, it was like this race for the world. That's how it feels like to me, just in all these things that have been happening over the years, everybody wanted their claim to the rest of the world. And was it fear? Was it greed?
I think I think a lot of it started off as just basically having a look what was there. And then when they found what was there, that's when they realized, actually, wow, we can make something out of this. So obviously going across to South America, for instance, was to see what was there. But when they found it, they then realized the value of it. And then, because, you know, we all know that gold actually isn't worth anything. Gold as a metal is actually
just
not worth anything.
Just because we said so. It's just because we said so.
Yeah, exactly. Because gold hasn't got a lot of sensible uses. Mm-hmm. You know, iron is more useful than gold is. But it's only because we put a great value on gold. As soon as they went to South America and they found all the Inca gold, what do? They bring it all back to Spain. You know, like, or what do
could
we
you
do?
Think
when
about
we...
the weight?
Well, yeah,
Of
that
carrying
well.
That.
Yeah, can you imagine how much is at the bottom of the Atlantic?
I know, you know. I mean, it's like what this perceived value that we have, even in real estate, how it changes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to
It's
me,
not.
the soil is the most precious, the water is the most precious.
Yeah.
You know, these are the air, you know, let's go to what real value is that we can, you know, but it's money.
I always remember my teacher at school when I was at primary school, learning all about Boadicea. Now, when we were there, our teacher said, "What would you rather have if you were thrown on a desert island? A ton of gold or a knife?"
A knife.
Exactly. You know, and that's them sorts of times that you need to actually realize is why we, it's only because we're told to put things higher up in value. You know, things aren't actually worth anything. until we want to compare it to something else. So, a lump of gold is absolutely useless. But actually, if you needed to, an axe would be more use than a ton of gold.
Okay, so Glenn, you know how people use like gold leaf on food?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
I just had to turn to food somewhere here, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just, hey, listen, I have to tell you, our friend just came back. Cheryl came back. Well, you've met Cheryl, travel advisor from England, and she brought us some chocolate caramels, Cadbury chocolate caramels.
Oh, did she?
Is she not the sweetest person? This is very
Wow.
important. Listen, there's nothing, the Cadburys in England versus Cadburys in America are two different things. It's almost like two different companies. The one in America, no. The one in England, you had the chocolate eggs for Easter. Listen, that is correct. What we have here now, that is not correct. That has no value. That is the gold. The one in England, that is the knife. That's what we're talking in value. But
now
I mean,
we
it's
know.
I'm just saying it's an important thing. So if you're thinking of going to England, I would go for Easter because you'll get really good chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's
Do you have a lot of people
chocolate
coming
in the
over
shop.
still for history and genealogy and
Oh, yeah.
tracing the footprint?
This afternoon, I've been writing up another tour I'm putting on for somebody in August. So that's
Good.
all good
Keeping
stuff.
busy.
Keeping busy.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we can't wait for next month. Everyone, Glenn is here as always every fourth Saturday, and we're going to be talking about crossing borders, right? Because you crossed into Wales. Maybe we're going to touch on a little Scotland, see
Well,
what you find over there.
I'm looking forward to going up to Edinburgh, so I shall see what I can see up there to talk about. There's something I
Okay.
want to have a look at, so I'll keep that as a surprise.
I think one of the most important things to do is to see, just like I talked about the chocolate eggs.
Haggis.
Okay. Oh, you're into haggis? Is that what you're going to do? I thought you were going to check and see if Edinburgh does as good a cheese scone
Well,
as
I
you can get
will.
in Norfolk.
I have to, but I've got to have haggis while I'm up there. But that's not
Really?
what I'm going to talk about next time, hopefully.
Haggis. Have you had haggis?
Yes, yeah. My sister-in-law used to live in Carlisle, and her father-in-law was a butcher, and he used to make his own haggis, and it was gorgeous. Lovely stuff.
Do you eat tripe?
Never tried it.
What about
Never.
blood pudding? Isn't it the same?
Yeah, black pudding, I'm not keen on it. It's a bit too fatty.
Steak and kidney pie?
Of course.
Really? Liver pate?
Well, yeah, sometimes they put brandy in it, so I'm not keen on that.
Nah. Oh, but so let's just bypass all of that conversation. But a good Scotch egg is good. A good Scotch egg is
Scotch egg is
good.
lovely.
I love a good Scotch egg and rhubarb pie. That's what I remember from Scotland. Rhubarb
There you
pie.
go. I'll let
All
you
right.
know
Well,
what it's like.
everyone, norfolk-tours.co.uk is a website to keep up with Glenn, and he's on social media on Facebook and also Instagram and Twitter. So keep up with him there, but have fun in Scotland. Don't do anything we wouldn't do. And don't forget to get a new kilt when you're up there.
Oh, yes.
Uh-oh.
That'll be good, won't it?
Yeah.
But that's not too cold a weather up there.
You never know. It's April. You never know what can happen in April.
There you go.
Thank you for joining us for Big Blend Radio's English Connection show with Glenn Burrows, owner of Norfolk Tours. If you're planning a vacation to England or looking up your family history in England, visit norfolk-tours.co.uk to connect with Glenn. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.